Father Jay Simone, and he's written a book, On My Way Home. And he's such an interesting man. We just couldn't help but have him be our first guest for speaker for today.
Thank you.
So, here he is.
Thank you. Thank you, Jerry. And Cindy and Phenomen News for inviting me. Pleasure to be with you today, and it looks like a very happy crowd. And we'll have some fun today because there's a great topics that people often speak about, and I'm glad to be part of it. Probably the first question you're asking in your mind, you might be anyway, is what's a Catholic priest doing here at this festival? Look at all the heads. Bottom Line Spirit Festival. You know what? I ask myself the same question. And you know what? I think I belong in this place because, I'll tell you why, because body, mind, spirit connection is the work of every clergyman, is it not? We sometimes get carried away with just the spirit while we got mind and body to worry about. So we have a few things to take care of. A whole person, holistic health and holistic spiritual health should come right from the pulpit too, not just from everywhere else. My colleagues don't agree with me on certain things, but then that's their problem, not mine. But I've asked myself that question. I think it's because I have, since I was a child, have always had a quest for truth. Even as I was going through the seminary, I was asking myself a question, is this stuff really true? You know, or is this because somebody said it, the theology and the philosophy? Well, I believe it, a lot of it, because it really did make sense. But there are some things that are beyond what they teach in school, even to in seminaries. But because I have been involved in teaching Silva Method of Mind Development, I've A Course in Miracles, teaching these kind of things and metaphysics in general, I've been accused of heresy 4 times by 4 different priests. These priests were fine gentlemen, but they were on the conservative side, myopic, nearsighted, so to speak, spiritually. And they thought that what I was doing into the KC readings and all that's from the devil. Unfortunately, that's what some believe. Now, that, please do not take that as a stereotype of priests. There's some wonderful, fine, open-minded priests out there dedicated to service their whole lives. But these are just, there's always somebody in every religion, in every group, that's very fundamental. And they attack. They always are on the attack. So in those 4 cases, those in authority sided with me, so it was not a big problem. I'd like to ask this question. How many of you here believe in, at least in the possibility of reincarnation? How many believe in reincarnation? Yeah, this is a pretty strong. We're talking almost everybody here. Well, that's good. How many of you, this is just to give me an idea where you're at. How many of you actually believe that you have had an authentic past life experience by memory, deja vu, flashback, anything? Okay, that's a good number. It's more than half, I would say. This is a very live crowd and a good one. I like this crowd. Okay, we're not really going to go into any convincing of it anyway. That's not my purpose. Rather, I would like to just simply affirm that I, too, have been working with this reincarnation concept for many, many years. Several things convinced me of it. One of them was reading about people like Mozart, age of 4, writing symphonies and things like that. Where did he get it from? And when I was, I belonged to a prayer group years ago. Well, I've always had prayer groups. I have one now I meet with every month. But way back, about 25 years ago, I was meeting with a group in Grosse Pointe. We were all adults coming, and one day this man that was in his 80s, late 80s, brought his great-grandson. His great-grandson was 6 years old. And I said to him, well, we'll put him in the other room and keep him occupied while we have our discussion. He says, no, he wants to sit with us. Is this 6-year-old? He said, this is not an ordinary 6-year-old. I said, in what way? He says, you'll see. He kept up with all the conversation we had. He understood everything we were talking about, especially metaphysics. When it came time to have a little snack afterwards, I was talking to him. He was a vegetarian since the day he was born. He would never eat anything but vegetables. And when we sat down to pray in meditation, well, it was meditation, not a prayer, but meditation, everybody was sitting down on chairs. He sat on the floor, not in a half lotus, but in a full lotus position. It was a six-year-old child. And he comes there and his hands are out here and he goes into this meditation. This boy is not an ordinary little boy. He talked about being a monk in Tibet. I think he came in very quick because his memory was all very clear. Whether he still is, I lost contact with this family because the grandfather died, didn't come back, and I never had contact with this young boy again. I hope they didn't take out of him the great memories that he had, because sometimes when you grow up, they start talking about, this is silly talking about Tibet, we're in America, and so on. But I presume that this child is not going to forget, and I would love to meet him again, but I have not. These kind of things indicate to me strongly that there is something to it. But beyond all of that, even the scriptures, Jesus called Elijah John the Baptist, remember? Coming down the mountain when he was transfigured and is brighter than the sun, and the Father said, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." They came down the mountain with, he came down with Peter, James, and John. And they asked him, "Why didn't Elijah come back to announce the coming of yourself as a Messiah?" Because they knew he was then. They were sure of it. Jesus said, "He did, but they did not recognize him in John the Baptist." This is very clear, I think. Some people say, well, how could it be? Because Elijah was up on the mountaintop, Elijah and Moses, and you got John the Baptist still on earth. But that's linear thinking. There is no time. This is what I'm saying. All these lifetimes go on at the same time. That's another story. I'm not going to get into that today. Those of you that are very alert know what I'm talking. How many know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Well, you're a very alert crowd. Congratulations to you all. That life is symphonic. All things are going on like an orchestra at one moment because there is no time. And also because I just counted them up last night. Because I've always said I've had 20 past lifetimes that I know about. It's 22. 14 of them came in one night. I'll talk about that in a few moments. 5 of them came when I was in different countries. And 3 came in super vivid, lucid dreams. I've had thousands of dreams, many books filled with my dreams, but there are 3 of them that were unbelievable, and they were absolutely the true experience. But anyway, so I've had 22, so that kind of urged me to study about reincarnation. No, it didn't urge me, it pushed me. I was forced to study. I wanted to know what was going on. I'm going to a country and I find myself seen displayed before me like watching television. I'm wide awake and my eyes are open, I see this. And what is it? How can these things happen? How many of you read my book? Curiosity. Okay, good number of you. I don't want to repeat myself, but there was so many examples in there of where I did experience another lifetime while I'm here in this body. And they all are true. Every word in that is absolutely true. This is a book I wrote on my way home. And it's just, we'll talk about that in a minute. But so I wrote that book. I had to. I wanted to tell my story before I left this planet. Because I've had 13 classmates who have died already. And the other ones are old and some can hardly walk and some are dying. And I think, well, I'm going to start writing. So I did write about it. But you know, the first thing I said when I was first confronted with the concept of reincarnation, what do you think my first words were? It's stupid and it's a lot of nonsense. That's what I thought at first. But I went and studied it and I started to have experiences, more and more experiences. And I decided to follow a guidance that I felt within me. And the guidance was urging me to meditate. And I wanted to learn how to meditate more deeply than I was taught in the seminary. So one day when I went to this bookstore, this book jumped out at me. You ever go into a bookstore and the book just stares at you in the face? I did that. I read it. It was called Christian Yoga, written by a Father Desjardins, a Catholic Benedictine monk, whose ministry was in India, He studied under some gurus in India, and he wrote this book. And so I thought I would do that. I will practice hatha yoga, which is conditioning the body, for meditation. It's not meditation. Raja yoga is meditation. I didn't know about that. I just knew about hatha yoga. So I was doing all these different savasanas and everything. I was doing that every day, and I would meditate. And in the book, in that book, or in maybe another book I read, when the student is ready, the master will appear. So I thought, this is my premise. So I did it, and nothing happened. I meditated. I did hatha yoga. I meditated. I was standing on my head in the middle of the floor each day a little longer. Yeah, I did. I was telling people I'm on my head before most people are on their feet. And that was true for a long time. After a month, nothing happened. After 6 months, nothing happened. If you were in a program dieting and you're supposed to lose some weight and nothing happened, would you continue that program? I don't think so. If you were in a program to give up smoking and nothing happened at all after 6 months, you're going to stay with that program? I don't think so. But I stayed with it. After 6 months, I waited a year. After a year, nothing happened. After 4 years, nothing still happened. I'm saying to myself, I got to make a decision. Either I'm going to keep doing this or I give up at this point. My decision was, I will meditate in that manner and do the yoga exercises beforehand every day the rest of my life, as long as I lived, or whatever, or something will happen. I determined at that time, I did not care how long it took. Someday, somehow, God is going to interrupt. He's going to do something. He has to. I'm pressing them. Something has to happen. After 6 years, then it happened. And after 6 years, I had a tremendous experience. When the student is ready, the master will appear. And it was at St. Bernadette Church in Southeast Dearborn, walking down the aisle, and I saw a ball of light. There's a ceiling kind of low like here. It's a ball of light as bright as the sun, but it didn't hurt my eyes, so I kept looking at it. I knew it was not normal. This is something happening. I didn't know what it was. I could not see the altar. It was between me and the altar. I couldn't see the altar. So I kept looking at it. It was very, very bright. But then, I didn't realize it, a being of light appeared inside of that ball of light, the sphere of light. And it made what I thought was bright look like a shadow. His appearance was incredibly bright, powerful, with all knowledge and wisdom contained there. It was a powerful moment. And I thought, wow, I never thought this could happen. So I looked at him eye to eye, and I fell on my knees and wept. And I fell down on my knees automatically because I felt very, very unworthy to have this experience, to see the Master. I knew it was the Christ. There was no question about it. Then I put my head down, and I knew that he was looking at me yet, so I lifted my eyes. I looked at him again, and he looked at me, and he motioned for me to stand up. Beautiful smile. And I knew that he knew everything about me, the good and the bad, the mistakes I made, the stupid things I've done, the knowledge I had, the good things I have done, the error in my thinking, false direction. He knew everything about me and loved me. And for the first time in my life, I understood what unconditional love meant. This was a great experience. Then that night, I thought that was it, and I was flying all day. That night, I had a tremendous experience. I was awakened at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I was given a mystical experience, and I was on a high the next day. All day, I was on a high. I went to bed the next night and was awakened again at 4 o'clock in the morning. Mind you, at that time, I slept right through, got up at 8 o'clock. I was very, very tired every day. I had 5 complete distinct jobs. And I was so worn out, I slept right through all the time. I got up at 4 o'clock the second night, another mystical experience. Guides, divine guidance coming to me, doing all kinds of things. That's a whole other story, and it would take too long to go into that. At any rate, it happened the next night. To simplify the story, I was awakened 40 nights in a row at 4 o'clock in the morning, each night with a completely different mystical experience and education. I was educated, I was trained, I was given knowledge, understanding, and believe me, that has been the theology of my life. So you can see where I'm coming from, a different place than most priests would be coming from. On almost, it was either this last night or the second last night, this is what I'm leading up to. I was awakened at 4 o'clock again. It was a Saturday, so I didn't have any services that morning, so that was a good time. You know, the room at 4 o'clock is very dark. You can't see a thing. But this beautiful stone slab, about this thick, about a foot thick, was as big as I could see. It had a wooden peg on the bottom and a wooden peg on top. And I saw a lifetime of a man when he grew up, the things he learned when he died. It took about 20 minutes. I'm watching this like watching television with no commercials. It was steady watching. Then all of a sudden, it stopped. And then this stone slab turned and another lifetime appeared. 20 minutes, 10, 15 minutes. Another lifetime. Each one seemed to be progressive. Later on, my guides told me the first one was Lemuria. The second one was Atlantis. The third one was Egypt, then Greece, then Rome. And so it took me right through 14 lifetimes in 5 straight hours without stopping. Every time it turned, another lifetime appeared. And it was the most incredible thing I've ever seen in my entire lifetime. It was clearer than I'm looking at you. This is very, very clear. It was better than television. It was the real thing. It was in 3D. It's very beautiful. I asked, why 14? And the guides told me that all genealogies in 14s. If you study in Egypt, the dynasties were in 14, sets of 14. You take the Jewish history, genealogy of Jesus, for example, was in 3 sets of 14. Going back to Adam, they said this was your spiritual genealogy. And that's why I was 14 lifetimes. Then I had 5 others when I went to different countries, and I say, I had 22 altogether. Should I not study reincarnation? I think I better. There's too much evidence. Well, after that, after that was over, the 40 nights, it stopped abruptly. And after that, I thought everything was over, but it wasn't. It was just the beginning. Then I had direct communication for 25 years. I've asked questions on every subject: dreams, past lives, auras, chakras, Christ consciousness, cosmic consciousness, angels, rescue work, books to read, so on. And I have enough material to fill 2 books easily, but I was told not to publish them. So it was for my benefit, so that I could help others. It was not given for the world directly. It was what I'm doing. And so I've never published them until I get the word to do so. I don't communicate with them now like I used to. They told me that they taught me everything I need to know to accomplish what I came here for in this lifetime. But they will talk to me for an emergency situations only. Otherwise, just do what you're doing. So I'm doing that. I want to stop there. That's enough I wanted to say about reincarnation. I wanted to talk about the other topic. I'll leave a little time for questions after I've completed these 2 topics. By the way, these talking on reincarnation, then talking about being religious and being spiritual is in 40 minutes, whatever, is a big thing. I'm moving right along. I'm moving rapidly here. If you have questions, we can face them afterwards. But let me get into the other topic. And by the way, they are related in some ways. In some way, you'll see a relationship. First of all, a person who is, let me give you an example, and then it'll really make it clear the difference between being religious and being spiritual. I was at Holy Trinity Church downtown near Tiger Stadium. I was there 11 years. And this one day I finished Mass and I was taking care of the altar. Nobody else was in church except one lady. Front pew. She said the rosary every day, perhaps 2 or 3 rosaries every day. She went to communion every day, Mass every day. She prayed her devotions every day. Faithful, and she would be called a religious person. While she was praying a rosary, a man came in from the street to sit down. Most people would call him a quote-unquote a bum. We called him Knights of the Road. But one of the Knights of the Road came in to sit down and pray a little bit, or whatever he came in for. He sat there quietly. She turns around, goes down the aisle pretty fast, and she has a rosary in one hand, her purse in the other hand. She beat him over the head. She was beating him. She says, "Get out of my church. You can't believe it. Get out of my church." I ran down the aisle and I pulled her away from him. I said, "What are you doing?" She said, "He doesn't belong in my church." I said, "This is not your church. It belongs to the people. You go back there and sit down and do what you're doing with that." This person was very religious, but very unspiritual. You see the difference? Isn't that clear? Let me give you another example of the difference between being religious and being spiritual. I have a friend, a dear friend, close friend, who considers himself religious, and I do too. I consider him religious. He doesn't know that's an insult, but that's what. He's a fundamentalist. He believes in fundamental approach to the gospel, the Bible, and he's always got a Bible. You met people like that. They're ready for battle, you know. So they'll beat you over the head with a Bible if they could. But at any rate, his view was, remember in Mark 16, chapter 16, verse 16, Jesus said, "Those who believe and are baptized will be saved. Those who do not believe or reject it will be condemned." He took that literally. Now, there are 6 billion people on this planet. There are perhaps 1.5 billion, to let me be very generous, to say 2 billion Christians on the planet. He would put 4 billion people in hell immediately without any remorse. I said, "What if your mother didn't get baptized? Would she go to hell too?" "She would go to hell. My mother would go too." Now, this man is either the most cruel person I've ever met or the most ignorant person I've ever met. I think he was ignorant. I want to say that this, I felt sorry for him. That's the way he saw humanity. Jesus, I'm sure, never meant that because it contradicts the entire Gospels. And he said at another time, the Father has given me everything and I will lose none of those he has given to me, Judas included, Hitler included. I will lose none of those. And God gave him the world. And so I refuse to believe such things. As a matter of fact, in the Catholic religion, we see 3 kinds of baptism, which encompasses everybody, the whole 6 billion people. You're either baptized by water, sprinkling or immersion or pouring on the forehead, or 2, by desire, to do the right thing, follow a good conscience, doing good, avoiding evil. Or thirdly, by fire or by death, by your convictions, put to death. Either one of those is immediate baptism, and that's salvation. We don't. It's just stupid to believe that just because a person is not baptized according to the way this man thought they should be baptized. By the way he baptizes today is not the way Jesus had it. He was in the Jordan, you know, dunking in the water. He doesn't baptize that way either. It just didn't make sense. So that's the difference between being religious and being spiritual. One follows the letter of the law, and the other follows the spirit of the law. There are laws. If you don't think there are any laws at all, you don't eat for 5 days and you'll see what kind of laws affect you. There are laws. But it's the spirit of the law that is most important here. Now, some people need laws. Some people have they need to be told everything. When to pray, how to pray, what words to pray. You know, they pray, and I say to people, "When you pray to God, what are you saying?" "Well, I say Our Fathers and Hail Marys and Rosary." "Why don't you talk to them? Why don't you say somebody else's words? Speak from your heart." When you're with a group, and we want to say a same vocal prayer, we do it together. Otherwise, it'd be madness. But when you're alone, speak from your heart. God, you know, some people are going to be really fooled. They pray a lot, the religious type. But they forget that Jesus said that those who say, "Lord, Lord," will not be saved. He says, they will come and knock, and I will say, "I do not even know you." They've never talked to him. All it was repeating somebody else's words all the time. Speak from your heart. The master gave us a wonderful example of the difference between being religious and spiritual when he gave the story of the Pharisee and the publican. A publican was a tax collector. People hated them because they worked for the Romans. They were Jews working for the Romans. They were hated by the people. They were under Roman occupation. So Jesus gives them this story. A Pharisee and a publican went up to the temple to pray. The Pharisee said, "I thank you, God, that I'm not like the rest of others, those other men and women." He said, "I tithe, I pay my taxes, I fast twice a week. Not like them, I'm not crooked or adulterous, and I pray, do my prayers." And he was quiet. Then the publican or the tax collector bowed his head and he said, "Lord, forgive me, be merciful, because I am a sinner." And Jesus said, "That man who said he was a sinner was justified, went home justified, and the other was not." Because the other one was being very religious, but he was very unspiritual. The tax collector spoke from his heart, from his spirit within, and asked forgiveness, and he was listened to. This is the kind of thing that we're dealing with here. Now, most people who are religious will often quote the Ten Commandments of the Old Testament. People that are spiritual quote Jesus, who said, "Love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." Two positive statements. Jesus said, if you do that, and you love this way, you have fulfilled every law. That's all you need. Someone once said to me, and I thought that was cute, he said, "You know, if you said instead of the Ten Commandments, Ten Commitments, it would sound better, be something positive." But basically, there are a lot of negatives, and you'll find that most people that are just religious cater to the Ten Commandments because their religion is often based on guilt, if they don't do this, and punishment, fear of punishment. Guilt and fear of punishment are not good motives to pray or to be good. In fact, I once said from the pulpit, I said, if anybody is here just because you think if you don't come to Mass you're in mortal sin, please go home. Please go home. You don't belong here. Come here because you want to be here. You love to be here. And strengthen our own faith. That's why you should be here. Because they're religious, they didn't move. Can't deal with this kind of thing. Actually, for a person who is spiritual, again, they really follow Jesus a lot. Jesus said the Sabbath was made for men, man, not man for the Sabbath. Meaning the law was made for us. We weren't created for the law. We are beyond the law. And so that's what a spiritual person is like. You know, some people think that if they don't belong to a particular religion, they're not going to be saved. Some people think that. Some people that are Catholic think that. Remember, did you ever see the book called Mary's Message to the World? It's written by that Mexican lady. What would you remember her name? I can't recall her name now. I heard her speak in person. Was it Annie Kirkwood? Oh, I thought it was a Mexican. All right, let's say it was Annie Kirkwood, whoever the author was. The Blessed Mother of Jesus, came to her, and I won't say how it was done, but she came to her and said, "I want to write a book through you." And her response was, "You must be talking about a neighbor of mine because I'm not Catholic." Mother of Jesus said, "No, I want you to do it." She says, "But I'm not Catholic." Mother of Jesus says, "Neither am I." You don't have to, she wasn't, there was no Catholic then. There are people today that can combine both being religious and being spiritual, which I try to do myself. I respect law, divine law, but I try to follow the best I can the spirit of the law. There are people today who have done it, famous people who have done this. Mother Teresa is a very good example. Mother Teresa said her rosary, attended Mass, followed her devotions, but was an extremely spiritual person. Reached out to everybody and anybody. She never asked, what religion are you? She never asked such a question. You couldn't. Very spiritual also. She balanced the two. Martin Luther King Jr. is another one that did. He was a minister. He had his own religion. But he fought and died of equality for his people. Spirit of the law. Jesus did too. Jesus was very religious too. He went to the temple. He paid the taxes. He often was found in synagogues. But he was very spiritual. And spiritual people break obsolete laws. Spiritual people break obsolete laws. For example, he did not consider the washings important anymore. They used to have to wash from their elbows down to their hands, wash. Whole ritual before you could eat. He told his disciples, forget it. Forget about the outside. It's the inside that was important. And that's what he was talking about. He broke that law. He broke another law. He healed on the Sabbath of all things. They considered that work. And they condemned him for it. He said, now that is ignorant. If one of your animals was in a pit or something, you'd help him. Why not help humans? And the things that were obsolete, he broke those laws. He broke three laws at one time. He talked to a woman in public. She was a Samaritan woman. That's also breaking another law. And thirdly, he drank from water given her. That's three laws he broke. Jesus, by the way, I don't know if you knew this, was excommunicated from the temple because he broke these laws. But he was that because he was spiritual. Spiritual people break through obsolete laws that have no longer carry meaning to it. Something in the tradition in the past. So that's the kind of person we're dealing with. Now, let me just, before I finish what I want to say, just one little thought was interesting. Because I see in the list of speakers today, really an awesome list of speakers, the psychics, so many psychics. Two psychics told me in the past, I'll just give you one example of something that happened to me. Both psychics, neither one of them knew me, didn't know anything about me. I wasn't wearing this outfit. And I was with some friends that were just known as Jay. They never saw me before, never heard of me before. Two different, separate occasions. The one psychic said, you know, in the past life, you were an artist. And that person did not know I do art in this life. I've had two successful art exhibits, over 100 paintings in both of them. Never took a lesson. But she said, you were this famous artist in the past. And I said, yeah, right. And I walked away. At another time, another psychic said to me, who just met me, never saw me before, you were an artist in the past life, and I know who you were. And she named that same artist. I said, what? I didn't pay attention to them. I didn't even pay attention to them. I laughed. 2 years later, I went to Spain with two other people. We all, three of us, spoke Spanish. We were all over Spain. We went to Madrid, the famous Prado Museum. And this docent was leading us around, explaining all the paintings. And I was just standing there when we came to this one painting, very big painting, huge painting. I was there and boom, I went into trance. I was painting the picture. I could see everything was alive. I was telling the king and queen, come on through the door, come on over here. And I was telling little princess, there was a dwarf in the picture. Some of you might know who I'm talking about already. Pardon? Who? Yeah. Yeah. It was a different kind of painting. It was like looking in a mirror. So the artist was actually in the painting. And I'm painting this. Somebody bumped me and knocked me down on the floor because I was just standing there in trance. Knocked me down. I fell down. My brother, my buddy, Tom, who was another priest, he said, what on earth are you doing on the floor? You're an embarrassment. I said, no, I don't know how I got here. I was painting that picture up there. He says, you were what? I was painting the picture up there. He says, well, who painted it? I said, I haven't the slightest idea. You don't know who painted it? I said, no, I don't. We walked up, and it was Velázquez. Both those said I was Velázquez in the past life. Whether I was or not, I don't know, but they said I was. When I saw the painting, I went into trance. I didn't know it was he that did it. You can make your own conclusions from all that. But you see, I've had so much experience with past life, in this life, while I was awake, in trance, in dream, all kinds of experiences that have spelled out that I am where I'm supposed to be. So I want to conclude by saying that. Some people said, with all that you've experienced, the knowledge you have about metaphysics, which I've been teaching for over 30 years, how do you remain in the Catholic priesthood? And my answer is, because I choose to stay there. I choose to do it. Each of us has work to do in our lifetime. You may or may not know what you came here for. People would hunger to know what they come here for. What is their work that they're supposed to do? When you have the guidance that I've had for 25 years of direct communication and the experiences I've had, I know why I came here. I know exactly why I came here. I am doing what I'm supposed to do. My work is to help, to console, to counsel, to strengthen the faith of others. This is my work here. And that's what I want to do. I had to give up a few things. It was not easy to give up a family, but when I studied Edgar Cayce and all the experiences I had and was convinced that I had lived before, I had many children in the past. I don't need them in this lifetime. Like, who needs them in this lifetime? Some families are, it's their greatest cross. Just 2 days ago, someone said to me, I wish I never had those children. And that's not the first person that told me that. The point is, in this lifetime, I didn't need that. Those of you that are parents, God bless you. It is a wonderful work. I'm not in any way saying that it is not. It's God's work, creative process. And sharing in creation is beautiful. I'm happy about it because I'm the 10th child out of 11. If my mother didn't have all those kids, I wouldn't be here today. So thank God for mothers. And also that my contract was made before I came here. The events, the most popular events were set up for me, but it doesn't take away free will. Free will is my response to it. I'm not a predestinationist. I don't believe that everything's predestined. I believe the events are serious and the most important events are set up, but your response is important. So your free will comes in. And I like Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 1 to 11. There's a time to be born and a time to die. And everything else in between. And he goes through the whole process. I enjoy the discovery of life. The life I've chosen, I'm discovering who I am. And that's what we're all here for. Read Neil Walsh, his communication with God. That's why you're here, to discover who we are. That's the reason for being here. And believing in the unfolding of life. So, one of my most popular sayings is that the whole universe is unfolding. And everything is on time. And we're part of it. I believe that God's law is perfect. I believe in law. I believe in the spirit of the law. Keeping the spirit of the law leads to holiness, happiness, and peace with God and peace with others. And I do believe very strongly in what Krishnamurti said. Truth is a pathless land. I'll say it again. Truth is a pathless land. There's no one way to experience truth. There are 6 billion people on this planet. There are 6 billion ways of reaching God. Truth is a pathless land, and nobody has it all. Religion itself can never save anybody. It needs the spirit, spiritual view of life, and that does bring peace and happiness now. And if you live unconditionally, and you're sincere, honest in the path you've chosen, and you are a forgiving person, God will bless the path you have chosen and lead you to your eternal home. That's where we all want to go. So may the Lord bless your path and bless you on the path. Thank you. We can take questions for about 7 minutes. Yes. Yes, dear.
My husband has asked me many times, Pat, what do you think this is all about? Why are we here? What is this life all about? And you just said, because I don't have the answer to that, but you just said to discover who we are.
Correct. That's a correct answer. The question is, your husband asked you the same question that people have been asking for centuries. Why are we here? What are we doing here in this planet? And I said, to discover who we are. In spirit world, you don't progress very rapidly because everything is in prosperity. It's a beautiful place to be. We come here in the world of limitation to learn what our limits are, what we can do and what we cannot do. We learn about ourselves. We learn that we have an ego that we have to deal with. We get jealous when people get favored over us. That's something that we learn, and we can look at it. It emerges, and we can resolve it. somebody makes you angry, that person that makes you angry, you should give thanks, because that anger coming out of you, you can face and see who you are. In other words, everything that happens to you in this life is discovering who we are. Now, we have no idea just how powerful we are. Most people, they read this and they say, oh yeah, we're created in the image and likeness of God. And then they go on about their business like nothing happened. Believe me, if we are created in the image and likeness of God, we are godlings. We are embryonic gods. And Jesus said that. Do you not know that you are as gods? In the Old Testament it says that, and then the New Testament, both. Ye are as gods. We have no idea how much power is within us. We're getting to learn more and more. We're getting to understand, but at some point, we are to be able to do what Jesus did. We need to progress to that. He said, you can do the things I do and even greater things than I do, because I'm going to the Father. Most people don't believe they're worth anything. That's sad. It's an insult to God who created them. We came here in the world of limitation to find out what we can do and who we are. That's the purpose of life here. And to establish in this life a relationship with God which is going to last forever. There will be other people that will tell you there are other reasons for living here, to raise a family, get married and raise a family. Those are all wonderful, but that's not our ultimate purpose. Ultimate purpose is a relationship to God and discovering in that who we are. That's my view. Any other questions? Yes. When you see, there's two things we have to distinguish between the end of the world and the end of the planet Earth. Now, the world is us, and the planet Earth is much bigger. It's going to last for a long time, probably 5 billion more years. I don't think it's the end of the Earth, no. Is it the end of civilization as we know it? I don't think Y2K is going to bring us back to the caveman style. Not that far back, if anything at all. No, I don't believe it is. Every time we come to the thousands, the millennium, the people think it's the end. In the year 1000, they thought it was going to be the end also. Everywhere, people were giving up their jobs and so on, and we think it was the end. Even before that, when they heard about Christ going to be coming back again, which is called in Greek the parousia, people were quitting their jobs, giving all their food away. St. Paul said, you get back to work. It's not the end of anything. And in the year 1000, they had to tell them the same. In the year 2000, it can be the same thing. In the year 5000, they'll be saying the same thing. My answer is no. It's the end times in the sense of it's beyond, way beyond the year 1000. We're way beyond that. We've progressed tremendously. It's the end of the old times and something new. But I do not believe there's going to be like an Armageddon. You know, Christ on one side and the demon, devil on the other side, and big battle. I don't believe that. I think that goes on within us every day. If there's anything called a devil, it's right inside of you called an ego. That's my view. We are battling that every day, all day. So that, and did Christ come? He's been here every day. He's never left us. I believe that Jesus' promise is fulfilled when he said, I will be with you all days, even to the end of the world. That's my view. I don't know if I answer your question. No? Would you like to answer it yourself? What would you say?
Well, no, I'm talking about the 1,000 years.
You didn't mention that.
Well,
1,000 years of peace, I'd love to see it happen. I don't know. Honestly. Okay? Any other questions? Are we... Okay.
How do we get a hold of you?
Oh, yeah.
First, you buy a book. You go to the last page. I got my address there. Otherwise, you get a pen and I'll tell you right now. By the way, I have books up in the front at the main desk where Phenomenu's desk. You know when you come in at the main door, just to the right, coming in this way, it'd be left of it, is my books are there. I will autograph them there if anybody's interested in getting the book. I'm writing my second book. My first book is in its fourth printing. The second book, I have 170 pages, moving right along, and I hope to finish it before summer. And I'll have the second book out. So I'm working on that. The first book is $15, and I'm paying the taxes. That'll be the discount for you. So if anybody's interested. And you can get a hold of me by, if you want, do you want the address? 34664 Spring Valley Drive, Westland, Michigan, 48185. Phone number? You got it? Phone number is 734-525-0262. Since I'm no longer a pastor, I no longer have perks like having secretaries, I'll answer myself. I retired in 1995 from being a pastor. And I now help weekends. I've helped probably in 10 different parishes since then.
What was your last parish that you were assigned?
St. Michael's in Monroe. It's the last parish I was in. That's what she asked.
How does the cardinal feel about your work?
About my work?
About what you're doing. Is he positive towards it?
You mean about in the metaphysics thing?
Yes.
I don't think he knows about it. It's the truth. He doesn't know about it. But the cardinals have known about it. Others, and he does too. Because they know I taught Silva, and they know I've been in the Casey things, but I think they're withholding opinion right now. Okay? Yes?
I went to St. Michael's in Monroe, and I knew Father Ted. We had many talks, and he believed in reincarnation.
Father Ted did? God bless him. He passed on, and he's enjoying.
He told me, this was 20-some years ago.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
And he said that man had a lot of love, and we had
okay. Wonderful. Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay, yes.
Every artist has his or her own inimitable style. Is your style similar to that of the Bosco?
Not at all. In fact, my paintings, I've done over 300 paintings. Probably close to 400 paintings. And I don't like repetition. I don't like duplication. They don't look alike. And I, you'll see paintings in a museum. This is a Rembrandt, an El Greco, you know, a Monet. There's no thing you say, this is a Simone. No. I have so many different styles. But I did have a professional critic from New York look at my paintings. And he said, you are a neo-impressionist. I said, oh, that's great. I said, what's a neo-impressionist? He said, if you were doing a shirt on somebody, would you do each button separately or would you just go boom, boom, boom? I said, I would go boom, boom, boom. He said, you're a neo-impressionist. And but I do have that style. Neo-impressionism is my style. I've done with oils, acrylic, watercolor, pastel, everything, airbrush.
Where can we see your work?
Well, I have not enough paintings yet for another exhibit. The first exhibit, I had over 100 paintings. The second one, I had 140 paintings and 300 prints. Sold everything in both of them. I have about 20 paintings right now. When I get about 50, I might have another art exhibit. But I'm writing more than painting right now, yes.
Have you ever listened to Robert Moss? He's from Australia.
Robert Moss talks about interpreting dreams.
Right.
That's guided imagery.
Right, and then he says you walk through the gallery and you'll pick something, a painting, a art, and you go into that, into your past life.
Okay.
That's what you
did there. Yeah, thank you. You know what, I think we're going to just take one more question and that's it. No more questions? Nope, we're time's out. So thank you very much, everyone.